You make a good point, though. They are in Hollywood. They could probably find a couple actors.
Everybody, you're Sorkin in it. It's Studio 60. Please take just a minute. It's about a show, kind of like SNL, but it only lasted one season. Oh, well, we're Sorkin in it.
Welcome back to Sorkin in it. I'm your host, Brian Warren, but there's another host here, and his name is Lex Friedman. Hey, Lex, how are you?
Brian, I'm wonderful. How are you?
I'm great. I'm great. We just spent a little bit of time in the pre-show telling each other, or me telling you about how bad I felt last week, but this week I felt great. And one of the reasons I felt bad last week,
because
we couldn't record a show together, this week just feels so much better. I'm glad we're here.
I'm glad we're here too, and I'm glad we're here to discuss perhaps Aaron Sorkin's most famous television show, Studio 60 on the Sunset Strip.
That's
it's
the one.
His most famous television show. Brian, we watched, if memory serves, episode 7, which in my notes I wrote Studio 70. That is not correct.
Nope.
Episode 7, whose title is Nevada Day Part 1. What happened in this episode? Boy, oh boy. Well, we meet a father and daughter from Japan.
China.
They're actually from China and not from Japan?
Yeah.
I couldn't remember which way it went. Okay, so they're actually from China, not from Japan. Who John Goodman thinks are from Japan.
Mm-hmm.
We meet John Goodman as a judge. Tom is in Nevada because there was a warrant out for his arrest because of stuff from a long time ago.
Yeah.
And we don't have all the details. Harriet's in trouble with Matt and with gay people all across the country. Jordan has a plot point of some sort. I don't know. This was a bit of a hodgepodge episode. Mm-hmm. And I believe, Brian, this is the one, or the first of the two-parter that I've been referencing to you, of when John Goodman shows up.
Yep.
And this kind of like a road trippy feel or whatever. And I'll tell you, I want to know your take, but I'll tell you, I from the get-go, this episode's frame made me grumpy. And I remember not liking it. And I didn't love it, but I also didn't hate it. I thought I was going to strongly dislike it, and it merely wasn't my favorite. But I darn if it didn't work on me a little bit, Brian. It worked on me a little bit.
Yeah. You know, when we got here and I saw that Tom was in jail, I was like, yep, this must be the one. This must be the one that he referenced. I barely remember it at all. The only thing I remember was the name of the town. When they said it was in Pahrump, Nevada, I was like, yes, I remember that now. I still don't remember anything that happened. But Pahrump really stuck in my head. You know, it's a funny name, and it did feel a little bit Sorkin. And I went and looked it up. I was like, did he use Pahrump anywhere else? You know, did it show up like in some random conversation or something in the West Wing? But no, I couldn't find any other time he'd used it. So
no, it's funny. I thought it might have been made up because it just made me think of Harumph every time they said it. I was not familiar. I did not remember that part. So good for you for remembering. But I'll say this before we even dive deep, that I'm really impressed with the storytelling in this episode, because it keeps you captivated. It gives you enough information to know what's going on, but it's really a very disjointed narrative of going way out of order. And I thought that was funny. I thought it was cleverly done.
I like that too. And whereas the last one with the rap party, it felt like three very disjointed stories, barely hanging on to each other just because they took place in the same building. This is better. This feels like a single thread that we're all just kind of pretty strongly connected to throughout it. And there's a little bit of, is there a little bit of time travel in it? Yeah, there's a little bit of time travel. So we kind of do some flashbacks and stuff.
Great Scott.
It's heavy. But that all was pretty effective too. I didn't, there's parts of it I didn't like about this story. There's a couple of characters I really did enjoy, but it was just okay. And it didn't really affect me the same way it affected you, I guess.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I really didn't hate it. Although I expected to, maybe I don't like part two, or maybe I just am a different person now from the person who watched it when I saw it originally. It's always exciting to me to see the actor Michael Kostroff, whose name I don't know by heart, but had to look up. But he was playing attorney David.
Oh yeah, I liked him.
He plays grumpy or powerful or evil attorneys in many, many things, including The Sopranos. I believe he was a lawyer on that one. I didn't look this up, so I'm going on memory. But it's fun to see him. So, I mean, we open and we're in this, I guess it's a jail, right? We're in a jail. We're in Nevada. We see this Chinese dad and daughter. The daughter clearly has a crush on Tom. We know that right away. They're stuck. The Sopranos lawyer guy is there. And then John Goodman walks in. And man, you really don't like John Goodman from the get-go. Does this look like a court to you, Matlock? I thought it was a funny line. Yep. And then he says, who are the Japs? Which I couldn't believe he said. And then he's like, haha, I fooled you guys. Like, I'm not really horrible. JK, I know what MBS is, and I don't say these things. I thought that was weird. I thought that, Brian, beggared belief. I thought that's what it did. I did not think that a judge would do that.
No. It felt very TV, right? Like that he was playing on their misconceptions about how stupid he was. And we were supposed to believe that he is that stupid and that everybody else also in the show believed that he was that stupid. I don't think that worked.
It felt like that's a great call. Very TV-ish and like, you know, maybe preying on our own biases. Oh, this guy's you know, Goodman's playing him and he's in the South, although he's not in the South, he's in Nevada. And he's going to be this and he's not, I don't know. Sim doesn't get a lot to do in this episode, but I found him quite funny. He mostly has the same line over and over again for a large portion. The joint is mine. It's my
jacket.
Can
we all just agree?
Yeah. I appreciate that there's a little bit of like I'm Spartacus happening because basically in order, starting, you know, in the chronological timeline, Harriet Hayes was accosted on the street by some folks because she gave an interview where she said that she doesn't. That the Bible bans gay marriage, but the Bible also says, like, let people do what they want. I'm grossly approximating what she said.
Judge not, lest ye be judged.
And Matt, of course, is like, hey, that's a pretty fence-sitting kind of response. And she's like, you stink, Matt. I was team Matt on this one. Yeah. But I guess when she was quoted, she said even less. I don't know. But so people are mad at her. And they get in her face. And Tom comes to defend her. And one of the guys he's keeping, you know, pushing away from Harriet, and that person falls over. That's why Tom gets arrested, because the guy is charging him with assault. We meet some of the strangest cops ever later on in this episode. And it just so happens that while they were rehearsing a sketch about Jesus as the head of sanitary practices, Tom in his Jesus outfit got cold, so Sim lent him his jacket, and Sim's jacket had pot in it. So Sim saying, no, that's my joint. That's not even why we're in jail. He's in jail because he dodged the ticket on the other thing. And we don't even know why he got that ticket, but it's clearly going to be good.
It was speeding, right?
Well, no. But Sim said, did you tell them why you were speeding?
Oh, yeah.
And that's clearly a tease for what's coming in part two, which I don't remember. Complicated story, honestly. I thought that the sketch idea was pretty hilarious.
The sketch was funny. Jesus was the head of standards and practices. And the way Tom was playing it was funny. Like, just the way he just was so casual. And he's like, look, guys, well, this is fine.
I don't think that some of the rule that Sorkin is railing against in this episode is still the case. But you still, it's very rare to hear a God damn it on TV.
Mm.
Brian, 1,000 years ago, I published a humor book, a parody of Dr. Seuss called The Kid in the Crib. A parody of The Cat in the Hat. It's about parents with, you know, new parents with a young baby. And my reviews on Amazon got a little bit review bombed by a couple people because I used the phrase God damn it in that book. And that can offend some because they felt that it takes the Lord's name in vain. And anyway, the claim being made in this episode of Studio 60, the parent show, is that you can't say God damn it or Jesus Christ as an expletive, but you can say, or you can't say God or Jesus Christ as an expletive, but you can use it for direct address. So this whole sketch's concept is Jesus Christ, it's hot in here, but he's not using his expletive, he's telling Jesus Christ. I thought it was very funny. What's extra funny to me is
it was clever.
It's Danny's idea. Danny apparently is the real brains of this operation because he gives Matt the idea for the sketch but makes Matt think it's his idea. It's a whole thing.
That interaction with Matt and Danny was wonderful, and it just shows how much Danny plays Matt. Because it, at the end of it, he was like, you didn't even have a conversation with standards and practices. He's like, nope, never did.
It's funny. He plays him and Matt knows he's being played, which is quite funny.
He's like, oh, dang it, it worked again.
And so the judge knows about the sketch somehow, I guess because Tom's dressed as, I don't know. But the judge thinks he's going to be making fun of Christians. And he's like, no, it's not making fun of Christians. The whole thing. The girl plays the viola and not the violin. I don't know why that cares, why that matters.
Nope.
I actually didn't quite catch why we care so much about the girl's dad. He's very rich. But like, what does Jack want from Rich Macau Dad?
It's Ed Asner, who's all about he's courting that guy as to be an investor to help him break into Macau or something. I can't remember. I almost said cacao. Macau, I don't think that's it.
Yeah. Both.
All that really matters, I guess, is that he's like insanely rich and is the final linchpin on Ed Asner getting his massive deal in China.
Right. That sounds right.
He uses a line from West Wing. He's talking about why they're courting the daughter as well, because fathers of daughters, they're same everywhere you go. Fathers of daughters, that has to be something that Jed Bartlett said or something.
I didn't remember that line, but I'm not going to fact check
while we're
you.
Chatting. I'll fact check myself.
I'll do nothing but pay strict attention. But the I don't know. I did like Ed Asner. I liked Ed Asner not even knowing Tom Jeter's name. He calls him Tim Jeter, which I thought was fun. Mm-hmm. I was surprised to see, I don't think we've seen this fact yet, but that Matt on the show is Jewish.
Oh.
I thought that was a fun little surprise. So at some point we flash back to this, like you were referencing, we're seeing Tom's Jesus. They're rehearsing the sketch at a diner or at a restaurant, which seemed unusual to me.
Yeah. It's a little Seinfeld.
And then when she goes out, she is accosted by these folks who really have quite an elaborate setup. These men who are angry at Harriet Hayes have a copy of her CD, know where she's eating dinner, wait outside for her to come out, have her sign the CD. So they've brought both the CD and a Sharpie, and then they smash it in front of her to show how much they dislike her. And then they're really aggressive, like violent.
Yeah. Did that beggar believe for you too? It did kind of flip the trope of people getting really angry and doing stupid things that is typically more of a right-wing nut job kind of a thing. So I found that it may be a little surprising.
Right.
Why they would stalk her just to throw a CD on the ground without anybody like filming it, planning on putting it on YouTube. I mean, YouTube did exist back then. So like, that seems like it's so performative, yet the only people they're performing it for are like three people. So I don't get it.
Yeah, it seemed very odd. I agree. It's this vibe. All of this vibe felt very familiar to me. In fact, multiple things in this episode, since you've been making some West Wing comparisons, a lot of things in this episode felt familiar to me, particularly with the West Wing. One is even just the layout of how it's shot, and I'll credit Tommy Schlamme for this, I guess, but like,
sure.
I remember when Toby and Sam Seaborn are in some random police station to bust out the chief, one of the nominees for the Supreme Court, like one of the next Supreme Court justices who's been wrongly arrested there in front of his kid. Mm-hmm. And like the way it was shot and set up was the same. Like the entrance was on the left and the desk was on the right. Like it was the same. And then the restaurant scene to me felt very reminiscent of an episode where I guess people were getting in CJ's face and Charlie especially springs into action to maybe people were getting to Zoe's face, but Charlie springs into action.
Oh yeah. And it was like at a bar, they were playing pool. Yeah.
Right. And like they give Sim a very Charlie-esque thing where he comes in and he is the guy who's going to really, he's going to calm everybody down and be the enforcer.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. It was a lot, but it was familiar. And the guy falling back, like you can see right away, they all know this just escalated. And I don't know. In this moment, I certainly feel for Tom, who's doing the noble thing. He's telling the people to get out of her face. And he's making sure that Harriet is safe.
Yeah.
And Sim is doing the same, right? Sim's like, get in the car, get in the car, get in the car. Harriet is frankly being an idiot, trying to engage with these people who are not in engaging mode, right? Like this is not the time to reason with them.
Right. As if they would all back off if they just heard the other half of her quote. No, I don't think they were there to hear the full quote.
Right. Let me explain further. And when the guy falls out, you're like, uh-oh. We see while they're rehearsing that Tom is cold in the Jesus outfit. Mm-hmm. And Sim gives him his jacket. And all I could hear was dun, dun, dun. Because we know that that's where the joint is. But yeah, then we're back to, I wrote reality. We're back to the current episode's present with John Goodman's judge. And I really didn't like the judge. And I thought John Goodman did a fine job with what was written. I just didn't like how it was written. And it continued to bother me. But this is where I felt won over, was I liked how the storytelling was happening. And then there's this moment of chaos where everybody is trying to defy the expectation about them or something. Everybody's defensive and angry.
Yeah.
And like, we cut the sketch. No, you're doing the damn sketch. It's my joint. No, it's mine. It's my show. And like, we've mostly glossed over a lot of the Jordan plotline because Jordan is very underserved in this episode. Mm-hmm. And actually, I think we haven't gotten to Jordan yet in the episode's timeline, or in the episode's scripting. But we eventually find out that Jordan's told Danny, when you're told you can't do the sketch, fight with Jack a bit, and then eventually give in, he needs a win, mm-hmm. which Danny immediately doesn't do, and then tells Jack what's the plan, and that makes Jack so mad that he's like, I'm so mad that she wants me to get this win that I don't want this win. You may now do the sketch. You must do the sketch, which maybe was, we'll find out in part two, was Jordan's plan all along.
Sure.
But all of it was very silly. But I did enjoy the chaos of that moment back in the jailhouse. And then we know that, like, there's a failure to answer a speeding ticket. Why he was speeding, he hasn't explained yet, mm-hmm. and it's clearly going to be important. I feel like maybe that's going to involve his military brother or something. I don't know.
Could be. I mean, we know he gets back involved at some point, right? So yeah. This has got to be it. I hope we don't have to bring up some other random thing in Tom's past that kind of feels a little torturous.
I hope that too. But it's, I don't know, like, it wasn't, I thought it was actually better than last week's episode. I went in like, oh no, it's this episode, which I vaguely remember. And then I didn't hate it. And we thought the last week's, well, the last episode that we watched, the rat party, we thought it was mid, as you and I mm-hmm. say, because we're hip.
Yeah, we are.
And I thought this was mid plus.
I'd leave it at mid, but.
Wow. Wow. See, this is why we do a podcast, because we don't agree. I think mid plus. Brian thinks mid. What a gamut we run here on Sorkin in it.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, hopefully our legions of listeners can help us and really find out which one they side on. You know, they're going to either side on mid or mid plus.
Yeah, and maybe they hated it and maybe they loved it.
Could be.
I want to know.
One person in the past week came to me and said, my condolences on having experienced all the good episodes of Studio 60. It's all going downhill from here for you. So
who said that? Personal?
It was in person. Yeah. My buddy, John White. Hey, John.
Wow. Hey, John. Thanks for listening. So, wow. I hope he's wrong.
Yeah, me too. One point I love, I did kind of like the cop who is running the jail. I liked him. He was a little silly.
Yes.
And of course he has this great line of like, I guess you being some Hollywood big shot means they're going to be an army of lawyers who storm through the door. And of course, Tom's like, that's not going to happen at all. And Jack Rudolph just, you can imagine, I don't remember if he actually did it, but he like thrust open both doors with his hands and he says, I'm from Hollywood and I've brought my army of lawyers.
Yes, he really does.
I believe the governor's office called and dropped my name. That was great. I don't know. I enjoyed Steven Weber in this. He chewed it up great.
Yeah. This, I would say, is a time that, like, Steven Weber's character, more than I think anybody else is on Studio 60, feels like one we've seen before, where it mm-hmm. doesn't feel like a very originally crafted part. And maybe that's speaks the truth of how certain studio executives are.
Yeah.
Like, Jordan surprises us at most turns. She's not who we expect her to be. And Danny and Matt are, you know, fun takes on creative people, but mm-hmm. Jack feels like a trope character a lot of time, but I agree with you. In this episode, he is very fun and very funny. And
I mean, Steven Weber's, he's a funny guy. And so when he gets to be a little sillier is great, because you're right. He is kind of the Christmasina, Leona.
You said Christmasina and I heard Christmasina and I'm like, what is Christmasina? Is that a character I don't know?
Also from the newsroom.
Is that a thing the Jews don't know about?
Yeah, he could come across really villainous, and he doesn't.
Yeah,
the part in this,
much more likable than Christmasina on that show.
The part in this episode that was a little revealing about him was that he does not believe Jordan's gonna last very
long. That's right.
And they had a little conversation about that where, like, she's gonna flame out. She's gonna withdraw all the goodwill from her bank that she has, and it's gonna she's gonna fall flat on her face. And so he's telling like Matt and Danny not to tie themselves too close to her. Of course, we all know Jordan's gonna do great. I certainly hope so.
It's revealing in a couple ways, because you're right. It was revealing about how he thinks about her and what he thinks her future will be. But also he's like, since she's going to get fired, it has to be by me and not my bosses, because I have this power. And like, that's a really interesting, like, I was talking to somebody recently about a thing a CEO I worked for had said to me once, and this guy was fabulously wealthy. He had sold his first internet company for $500 million, and he got a whole lot of that. And he'd sold three other companies since. And he was like, yeah, the problem is, you know, the more money you get, you always feel like all you need to really be comfortable is two times what you have. And it's like, but that feeling never goes away. And I was like, well, that's a real problem. And I feel like it's also true with like executive power. Like Jack's like, I am the head of this network and I can do what I want, except I've got Ed Asner and whatever the upboard and all these other things. And like he, the fact that he still is dealing with the politics up, like dealing with politics down. Sure. I get it. And like when he's with Jordan, when he's with his team, he can just say what I say goes. But then in this other scenario, he's got to be like, yeah, I gotta play the politics of firing Jordan first. That is interesting. Also, if we take a half step back, well, you know what, Brian? I'm feeling generous. Let's take a whole step back.
Whoa. All right, folks, let's do it. Limber up first.
This is a lot of firepower to get back a guy.
Yeah.
Like the show's tonight, or yeah, the show's tonight.
Mm-hmm.
Why don't we get somebody to cover for Tom in his parts? Maybe we even bring in an extra guest, because I think they said that the show within the show was being hosted by Jessica Simpson, musical host and guest. She probably can't take Tom's parts, but let's get somebody else. If there's no other cast members, but like that should be the plan. Not let's send half the team.
Yeah.
To Nevada. That's crazy.
The only thing that makes any of that make sense is because they're using the NBS jet, which has the rich Chinese family on it. Right.
Right.
And so, and she needs to go meet Tom Jeter, and Tom Jeter's in Nevada. And so this conceit is barely hanging on at all. But it doesn't make sense.
Sim and Danny shouldn't be there.
No.
Sim and Danny should be in LA ready to do the show.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You make a good point, though. They are in Hollywood. They could probably find a couple actors to go.
right. Like,
to jump
we
in.
Don't know who the alumni are of Studio 60, but like, we know that they know all the SNL alumni because they talk about them nonstop on this show.
So, yeah.
I'm just saying a call could have been made.
SNL brings other famous people on for a sketch or two all the time. Like this isn't a crazy thing to happen.
It's also kind of funny that they like, they're worried. This feels maybe of its era. They're like, maybe we can get this, keep this quiet and nobody will find out. That never happens, right? There's a public police record. There's now a judge. Like it's going to be public. So
yeah.
What you want them to do is the same thing that Jordan told them to do with her. Like, lean in. Like, let's make it part of the show. The roles of Tom Jeter tonight will be played by Jessica Simpson, who shouldn't be doing it, or by, you know, by this other person who is nothing like her, him. Because Tom beats up gay people. I don't know, like,
yeah.
Which is not what he did, but, like, they could have owned it. And it feels funny to me that they're like, oh, let's try to hide this thing, because that certainly wouldn't fly in 2024.
Jesus Christ was arrested, both in the Bible and today in Nevada. Yeah.
Luckily, only the other guy got hurt, not him, because I wouldn't want to have Christ on a crutch. Hey.
On that note, folks. So this is part one. Thank goodness there's a part two, because boy, did they leave us hanging with a kind of strange voiceover from Matt, which I didn't really understand why there was a voiceover from Matt right at the end of the show, but
it was like a second recap of what we just seen.
Which like, that's what happened.
We didn't even mention new writer who they hired last week.
Oh yeah,
has like one really funny moment where he's telling, "Oh, where is everybody? Well, here's what happened," and it's like a recap of the episode to that point. And Matt's like, "Are you pitching me a sketch?" No, but then they again recap the episode. It was weird. I agree, and I bet it's the opening clip of next week's episode.
Oh, that's my hunch. Yeah. So that's what we have to look forward to. Part two.
Yeah.
Folks, in the next week, take some time and watch part two of Nevada Day. I have a hunch, because you're not actually doing a podcast about it, you probably just went ahead and watched part two. So I hope you enjoyed it, and I hope Lex and I enjoy it too. But in the meantime, also, please, we'd appreciate your support. Head on over to The Incomparable, pledge your support, become a member. You get all sorts of great bonus episodes. You get bonus episodes for plenty more shows than just ours. And you get to listen to the bootlegs, the live episodes and stuff. It's lots of stuff over there. What else do we need people to do? Rate the show in Apple Podcasts. That'd be helpful.
Yeah, write a review. If you write a review that's fun, we'll read it on the show. Brian will do it in a funny voice if you want.
I will.
Man, I really want to hear a Brian funny voice now. Please do this. And of course, we would be remiss were we not to ask you to keep on, you know, Sorkin in it, if it wouldn't be too much trouble,
right? You know, if you had some time, make time to Sorkin in it.